Parshas Noach begins, this is source number one, Ela Todo Noach, these are the offsprings of Noach. Noach Ish Tadik, Noach was a righteous man, right? Perfect in his generations, Noach walked with God. He had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Yafet. And the Torah continues and describes the surroundings in which Noach lived in. Now the earth had become corrupt before God, and the earth had become filled with robbery. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupted, for all flesh had corrupted its ways upon the earth. And God said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with robbery through them, and behold, I'm about to destroy them from the earth. So it would seem from the text itself that there were two reasons why God decided to destroy the world in the times of Noah through the Mabul, through the flood. The first is because it was corrupted, for all flesh had corrupted its ways upon the earth. But in verse 13, when Kadosh Baruch Hu is talking to Noah, he seems to emphasize the fact that the earth is filled with robbery. And in fact, our Chazal, our rabbis teach us this, that although we have this element of corruption, it was only the robbery that was nechtam gzar dinam, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, and it was for that that the decree was made that the world would be destroyed. And the Nesiv HaShalom in source number 2 really points out this process. He says, in the beginning, it was the concept of Hashchata, the world was corrupted. You had a world where the seams, so to speak, began falling apart. And through the corruption of the world, what resulted in that is something which is so clearly immoral, a stealing, where everyone knows you can't take something that doesn't belong to you. If you begin the process, the slippery slope of just being corrupt and going off the right way, so that it has an effect even on the logical elements of what's right and wrong, people lose their focus. And as we know, if the steam begins to go, the entire outfit, the entire structure is going to fall. Question number one is, what is it about Gezel, what is it about robbery that broke the straw, that broke the camel's back? It would seem that if they're being corrupted and their whole essence is falling apart, what is it specifically about Gezel, about stealing, that God says, hold on. God said to Noah, because the earth is filled with robbery, with Hamas, that's the reason I'm going to destroy it. What is it about robbery, what is it about stealing that's so terrible? That's question one. Question number two is, we know that God always punishes with something that fits the crime. For example, with the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, who were also very wicked people, God destroyed them through Gafrit v'Melech, with the fire, with the salt coming down. It was this destruction of fire. And fire is a concept of gvura, concept of strength, concept of justice. So it makes sense. People that are wicked are going to be destroyed with the element of fire. But we know that the element of water is what? Water always represents love and kindness. Just like water has no bounds, that's what chesed, that's what kindness is all about. So it seems very strange. If here we're talking about people who are corrupt and they're stealing, then why is the punishment through water, through an element of kindness, it would make more sense that they would be destroyed in the same way that Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed through the element of fire? Why was it the element of water used specifically? That's question two. And question number three is a famous Rashi, which needs to be understood because it really is a very difficult Rashi. Rashi, it's Rashi we're all familiar with, source number three, Bedorotav, in his generations. So says Rashi, there are different interpretations of the phrase in his generation, that Noah was righteous in his generation. Some sages maintain that it is in his praise. Noah was righteous even in his corrupt generation. How much more righteous would he have been had he lived in a truly righteous generation, like with the companionship and inspiration of Abraham? Obviously, he would have been a super righteous person. According to others, however, it is critical of him. The Yesh Darshimo Tov Lignai, they're critical. Only in his generation, right? The Torah seems to be limiting. Noah was a tzaddik, but hold on, Bidorotav in his generation, which means, says Rashi, if you would put him in the generation of Abraham, he would have been nothing. In his generation, he was a big tzaddik. You put him in the generation of Abraham, he would have been nothing. So Rav Schwab in Mayan Beit HaShoeva, sources 4 and 5, asked two very obvious and basic questions on Rashi. Question number one is, If the Torah itself is telling us that Noah was a tzaddik, was a righteous person, why are you coming along and doing what? Trying to find something negative. V'yesh darshimo tov lignai. We really find this. Torah, and the Torah outlook is usually very positive. We look for the good things. The Torah tells us something positive. The Torah doesn't tell us something negative about him. It says he was a tzaddik. Great, he's a tzaddik. Now you're coming along and telling me v'dorot tavid, his generation. Oh, that means, perhaps, only in his generation. If he lived in another generation, he wouldn't have been such a righteous person. What do you mean? The Torah tells us he was righteous. Why are we going out of our way to try to find something negative about him or state something negative? That's the first question on Rashi. And the second question on Rashi is, if we're going and ready and telling us that he was a tzaddik, a righteous person, so you mean to tell me the times of Abraham he would have been klum, nothing? How does that make sense? He's a righteous person. So the whole Rashi, that whole end of Rashi needs to be understood. So in reviewing, we have three questions. Question number one, why was it that the robbery was the straw that broke the camel's back? Question number two, why is it specifically water, which doesn't seem to fit the crime when it's a crime of injustice? Why did Kadosh Baruch Hu send down water, which is a sign of chesed, a sign of love, a sign of compassion, overflowing? And the third question is, how do we understand the Rashi about Noah himself? If the Torah describes him as such a righteous person, how come we're trying to criticize him and say in the times of Abraham he would have been nothing? The answer to all of the questions is the same answer. It's one answer. And it's one answer that's a yesod, that's a fundamental principle in life. Because clearly any time we learn these parashas, it's not only a question of a flood that happened thousands of years ago, it's a question of what is it speaking to me today? What can I learn from the parasha? How can I grow from it? So the problem that is found there, it's a problem that's found today. It's a problem found within us that we need to deal with. So I'd like to try to do is to try to understand on one level, what was it that was the problem with that generation? What was it that was the problem with Noah? And how we can fix it? And the way I'd like to approach the topic today is to approach it in the way of the tikkun, the way it was rectified, understand the way it was rectified, and through understanding the way it was rectified, we can then glean an understanding in the problem. The springboard for today is a Medrash, which found in Medrash Shochar Tov on Tehillim. It's source number 6. Our rabbis tell us in the Medrash, She'avram Avinu, Avraham, paga b'shem ben Noach. Amram Avinu met Shem, the son of Noach. Right? V'sha'aloh, and Avram asked him, Shem, please tell me, Heach nitzaltem, what was it about you that you had the ability to be saved from such a time of justice in this world? The Heshivlo. And Shem responded to him, Bekoach zeh she'asaknu b'chesed kol hayom. What was it that allowed us to be saved in the Mabul? That the entire year of the flood, we were involved in the concept of chesed, of kindness. She'kol hayom asku la'achil l'balei ha'chaim shebateva. We spent an entire year feeding animals. V'chesed she'asu hitzilam mecharon avshalom abo. And that's what saved them. And our rabbis go on to describe that they didn't sleep for an entire year, because we know that. They're nocturnal animals who have to be fed, you know, at certain hours of the night, and then they're animals they fed certain hours during the day. And they're not that many people in this ark, and there are a lot of animals. So even if you take turns, you're talking about 6 people, Noah, his wife, and 8 people, his 3 sons and their wives. So we're dealing with 8 people feeding hundreds upon hundreds of animals, and every animal had to be fed at the right time. In fact, the Medrash tells us Noah came a little bit late to feed the lion, and the lion gave it to him, right? He walked out limping. It wasn't so simple. They spent an entire year giving, 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 and giving. And that is what saved them. And the Siva Shalom on this Medrash in Source 7 says that very clearly. He says that had the people in the times of Noah been involved in chesed, in kindness, that would have saved them from this decree. Chesed is the antidote to the problem of that generation. Chesed, this kindness, is what God wanted Noah to go through for an entire year to try to rectify that which was wrong in that generation. So I'd like to try to do now is to work through what exactly is chesed, what is kindness. How can we work on chesed in our lives? And in that way, understand, if we understand what chesed is on the deepest level, understand what went wrong in the times of Noah. So we begin with the Rambam's definition, Maimonides' definitions, brought down in Source 8, where the Maimonides, on his commentary to Pirkei Avos, says the following. Loving kindness is practiced in two ways. First, we show kindness to those who have no claim whatever upon us. Chesed is done to someone we have no relationship with. We don't know them. Or we are kind to those to whom it is due in a greater measure than is due to them. A friend who we would normally be kind to, but we go above and beyond and act with kindness. Now this is very important. There's a distinction in life between an MS, a truth, an act of truth, and an act of kindness. We've seen this, we turn to the next page, in the second chapter of Yehoshua, where Rachav saves the spies, she hides them in her roof, and she says to the spies right before they leave, now since I have treated you kindly, please swear to me by God that you will treat my family kindly too. Please give me a reliable sign in Ot Emet. And this, the Radak, as well as Beor HaGra, and this is Source 10, says there's a difference between Emet and Chesed. Emet, truth, is doing something to somebody who you have a relationship with. Chesed is doing something to someone whom you have no relationship with or above and beyond. Let's deal with a practical situation. A friend of mine calls me up and says, her car is broken, can I give her a ride? By me giving her a ride somewhere, that is not a chesed. That is an emet. That's an act of truth. That's what I have to do in life. There's something called ethical behavior as an individual in this world that demands for me that if a friend calls me up and says, can you give me a ride, I'll give her a ride. If someone I don't know calls me up and says, can I have a ride, that's an act of chesed. Now, what would be an act of chesed with my friend? Very simple. She says to me, my kid needs to go to the doctor. Can you give me a ride to the doctor? If I give her a ride to the doctor, that would be an act of MS. Because if my car broke down, I would feel free to call her up and she would give me a ride to the doctor. It works both ways. But now we all know what doctors are like. If I sit with her in the doctor's office for 2.5 hours, and then I take her to the pharmacy, and then I, you know, take her on other errands, and then I bring her home, and I don't tell her to take a taxi. That's a chesed. A chesed means going above and beyond with your friend. So most of us in life do and score 100% when it comes to MS. We do for our friends what we would like them to do to us. What's much more difficult is to take that one step beyond and be involved in the area of chesed, be involved of going one step beyond the union of haflaga, as Maimonides says, of above, beyond, increase. Now, it's interesting to note what the source of chesed is in the Torah. Where do you see in the Torah what is the source in the Chumash for doing acts of chesed, doing acts of kindness? So it's very interesting that there are two sources, perhaps, that teach us and obligate us to be involved in acts of chesed. One is found in the writings of the Rambam in Hilchos Avelos, the 14th chapter, where he says, doing acts of kindness, levakir cholim, to visit the sick, ulanachem avelim, to comfort the mourners, ulotzi hameit, velachnis akala, to be involved in all aspects of chesed, comes from where the arrow is, the verse, v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, to love your friend like yourself. That which you would like others to do to you, that's what you should do to others as well. Now, it's very interesting, if we understand this as the basis of chesed, that you should do to others that which you do to yourself, so then there's a real limitation on chesed. Why? Because if this is the basis of chesed, so any time the self comes in conflict with chesed, so the self is going to win out. Which means, if somebody calls me up and says, can I have somebody over, and I'm really tired, and I'm not feeling well, so what will I say? This week isn't a good week, can you call back another week? Why? Because yes, I would like someone to have me over, and yes, I will have someone else over. But if it's based on v'ahavta re'echa kamocha, to love your friend like yourself, but there's that key line there, like yourself, and the self takes an interest. Perhaps the classic examples of this is the Book of Rut. The Book of Rut, which you read on Shavuot, we know, Chazal tell us, is written to teach us the schar, the reward for gomlei chasadim, those who do acts of kindness. But the Book of Rut is much deeper than that. It also tells us how not to do acts of kindness. And the two examples that I brought in Sources 12 and 13 are exactly that. the beginning of the story, which we're familiar with this very rich man, Elimelech, has a lot of money, has a lot of crops, it's a time of famine. Elimelech says to himself, you know what's going to happen? All my relatives live in town. I'm rich, they're poor. They're going to come knocking on my door with their baskets, can you give me food? You know what's going to happen? It's going to be enough. Enough is enough is enough. I don't want my door constantly being knocked on to give food. So what did Elimelech do? He picked himself up and went away. That's a question of chesed where the self is involved, we draw a line. Likewise, at the end of the story, where the Redeemer says, hey, if I'm going to marry Ruth, that's going to mar my inheritance, that's going to mar my name. I don't want that to happen. I'm not going to marry Ruth. And instead, Boaz marries Ruth and gives birth ultimately to David HaMelech. This is the level of giving to others that which you would want to be done, but there is that limitation of self. Then there's a higher level of chesed. And that's the level of chesed of found in the 13th chapter of the book of Zvarim, Acharei Hashem Elokechem Teilechu, follow God your Lord, remain in awe of Him, keep His commandments, obey Him and serve Him, and then you will be able to have a true spiritual experience to Him. Seems pretty easy, right? So ask Chazal the following question to Gemara and Sota in Source 15 and says, is it possible to walk after God? After all, is not God an all-consuming fire in Esh Ochlahu? How can you walk after God? So answers Chazal, very famous answer, La'aloch achar midotav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, walk after His ways. As God is merciful, you should be merciful. As God is kind, you should be kind. As God involves Himself in clothing and feeding and visiting the sick and burying the dead, you should do likewise. Now this is a much higher level of chesed. This is a level of chesed, probably the paradigm would be Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu on the third day after his bris milah, he's in a lot of pain. What is he doing? He's sitting out at the front of his tent in the hottest part of the day looking for what? Looking for strangers, looking for people to invite in. People come along the way. What does he do? He's in agony. He's not a young man either. Let's keep this in mind. He runs and he says, hurry. And he prepares this and he prepares that and he stands over them and he feeds them and he serves them. That's somebody who loves chesed. Who loves chesed not because it's convenient for me, because it wasn't convenient for him, it was the hottest part of the day. He's in pain, he has every right to say, not now, I can't handle it, no. This is somebody who's doing chesed because this is the way of following after God. And the fact that Yalkut Lech HaTov points us out in Source 17, that Avraham Avinu brought a higher level where the asterisk is of chesed, mitoch emunah b'Hashem, in belief in God. L'shem shamayim, to do it for God's sake. And not to do it just to appease our heart, to say, oh, we feel bad. Because if we say, oh, we feel bad, there's going to be a point, oh, we don't feel so bad anymore. But says the Yakut Lechato, just like God has the sun shining on the entire world without distinction, that's how we have to view chesed. To do all acts of chesed without distinction, without excuses, and really raise ourselves to a level of saying we're going to search out chesed. We're going to want to do these acts of kindnesses without that limitation of self. So we have two levels of chesed. We have levels of chesed of ahavta re'echa kamocha, of loving your friend like yourself, and the second level, the higher level, is the level of following God. How does one move from the first level to the second level? How does one move to a level of a Rut who's able to leave her fancy princess home and follow and live a life of a pauper because she realized that this is what needs to be done to be with her mother-in-law? How does one go from one level to the other level? So the answer is very simple. It's one word. It's a one-word answer. How does one move from one level of chesed to the other level of chesed? The answer is chesed. By doing chesed. That's how you move from one level to another level. By being involved in acts of chesed, that's how you grow. Okay, now let's get down to the brass tactics here. What is chesed? What is chesed all about, and how do we accomplish it? So I'd like to work through a wonderful part of an essay of the Alei Shur of Wolbe. And he begins his essay on chesed with perhaps the most inspiring idea on chesed that gives us a perspective on what chesed is all about that really, I think, changes our lives. He says the following. He says, when the nachash, when the serpent, tried to convince Chava to eat from the tree, what did the serpent say? So he said, ve'yitem kelokim, you'll be like God, which our rabbis explains means, yotzrei olamos, you'll be creators of worlds. to create worlds. That sounds good. She bought into it. We all like to create worlds. We all have this desire to create, to build. But, says the Alei Shur, the dimayon, the koach hayotzer, is not what's going to, the imagination from eating from that tree, that's not what's going to build worlds. You want to know what's going to build worlds? Hakoach hazeh hu chesed. What builds worlds? Chesed. And he says where the underline is, the end of 18, ki kol ma'aseh chesed, every act of kindness, afilu b'davar katan, even in something small, hu ma'aseh binyan v'yitzira, it's an act of building and creating mamash, literally. L'chayot ruach shvelim u'l'chayot lev nidakim, you're giving life to the lowly, to those who need support. You want to know how to build worlds? Chesed. Chesed builds up worlds and worlds of people around you. That's how you build worlds. So ask Rav Wolbe, okay, so what is Chesed? What is it that builds up these worlds? How do you do it? So he says something so, so powerful. This is where it's at. He says the directive of what Chesed is all about is found in the Chumash when it talks about the inyan of stokah, the inyan of charity and lending to the poor. In this is the 15th chapter, Dvarim, source 19 by us. If there shall be a destitute person among you, any of your brethren in any of your cities, in the land that Hashem your God gives you, you shall not harden your heart or close your hand against your destitute brother. Rather, you shall open your hand to him, patoach tifach et yadcha, open up your hand. You shall lend him his requirement, whatever is lacking to him. That's the key. And this, Rashi says, we'll do the English first and then the Hebrew in source 20, it's from the Art Scroll, Sod Chumash. Although you're not obligated to make the supplicant wealthy, you should try to give him what he lacks according to his individual needs. Someone who was once wealthy and lost everything cannot subsist on what would be sufficient for someone who is always poor. And Rashi specifically, this is like a summary of Rashi, says the following. Asher yechsarlo, that which is missing to him, afilu susler kovalav ve'eved larutzlofana. It might mean that he needs a horse to ride on or a servant to run in front of him. Lo, what's missing to him, Rashi learns out, zu'isha. This could be a wife. If that's what's missing to him, so the act of chesed is to give him a wife. Says the Alei Shur, you know what this means? That which is missing to him, asher yechsar lo, that's what chesed is about. He said there is no objective standard of chesed, because chesed is dependent on what every person needs. So explains the Alei Shur in source 22. Harotzeh liyot ish chesed, you want to be involved in chesed, you want to be involved in building worlds, sarich kodem kol lihit lameh, you have to learn where the asterisk is in 22, lirot to see ulahazin, and to listen, mayechsar lo, what's missing to him, lefi sarcho haishi haprati, the personal needs of that individual. As it says, zuisha, this is a wife, you don't give him any woman, that is silly. You give him a woman who would be fitting to him. And just like you give him a woman that would be fitting to him, and vice versa, clearly, likewise, everything else which is needed for him in particular, that's what you should give him. And in fact, it's interesting that the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, explains that's what the verse means, patoach tiftach et yadcha, open up your hand, says the Gra, why do you need to open up your hands? He says beautifully. He says, when your hand is closed, when you make a fist, so all your fingers are basically the same size. When you open up your hand, they're clearly what? Different sizes. Because when you give chesed, when you give staka, you have to give asher yechsar lo, that which is missing for him. That's what is his individual need. You can't relate to every single person on the same level. And that's why he says, continuing 23, some people will be missing money, some people are missing work, some people need advice, some people need help, some people need ruchnias, they need spirituality. You have to know what is the person missing. And he says, this isn't even chesed, this is the stage before chesed. You want to do chesed to another person, so you first have to work on developing within yourself the ability to read other people. And sometimes it's not so obvious. And sometimes you really have to have an understanding of the person, what they're missing. It's a famous story of which the Alei Shur quotes, of the rabbi who's asked, Erev Pesach, can he use 4 cups of milk instead of the 4 cups of wine? At which point the rabbi told his shamish, give him a lot of money. He says, why are you giving him so much money? He says, well, if he's asking me to use 4 cups of milk, clearly he doesn't have meat for the Seder either. So he needs money not only for wine, he needs money for meat as well. That's asher yechzar lo, understanding what the person is missing and giving them what they are missing. Reminds me of a story that happened to friends of mine in Eretz Yisrael, where my friend told me the following story, that they lived in a certain community, and every day there was a lady, an elderly lady, who used to sit on a bench right by the bus stop, who was sitting almost like in a statue position like this, never smiling, always with her hand out, always growling. So my friend told me that she was like a little bit uncomfortable to look at. Like every day, get off the bus, you see this person, never moving. And even if you would give her money, she never said thank you. We know personalities like this. So this person told me that her husband befriended this woman. And he sat down and began talking to her. And realized that it was not only money that this person was missing. At which point, the husband brought home her clothes for the wife to wash the clothes. And they went into the house, and they washed the house. You know, they cleaned the floors, and they did shopping for this person. And eventually, they got a social worker to work with this person to provide for this person's needs. That's what asher yechzar lo means. It's not only a question of the person is asking for money. What the person really needs is somebody to pay attention to the person, to give the person what they really need. They're not going to ask for it. Sometimes people are way too proud to ask for it. Usually people are too proud to ask for it, but if you have an understanding and you're looking, so then you're able to find and see what is it that this person needs, how can I fill this person's vacuum? So the Alei Shur continues in this essay, and this essay is really, the Sefer, the Alei Shur, is really a handbook on how to do self-improvement for students in the yeshiva. And what he has is having the students work on every aspect for a couple of weeks and then coming back and discussing it. So he says when the students came back and started working on trying to find out what other people need, so he said what happened was, this is source 24, what happened was most people came back and saw Masha Chaser La Atzmenu, what was missing for themselves. And they suddenly saw that everything that they understood, that everything someone else was missing, is really something that they were missing themselves. And they saw a mirror reflection of their needs in the other person. And he says the problem with this is it's a problem of looking at life through your own glasses. This ego, which goes back to the v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha, the kamocha, the so strong. So he says every time that he would look at a yeshiva boy and say, well, this is obviously what he needs. That's not what he needed. That's what the person who was looking thought that that's what he needed, because that's what indeed he himself needed. And he says this was the problem that they had to work through, is not to look at yourself, to go beyond the self and to see what indeed is this person missing, not what you're missing. So he says, how do you do this? How do you sensitize yourself to really seeing what the other person is missing and stepping aside from the ego of self of what you're missing? Because we all know we're missing. That's easy. And we all know how to get what we're missing. But to work on the other person, that's a little bit harder. So he suggests, and it's a very fascinating suggestion, he suggests the concept of Ha'aras Panim. This is source 26. Ha'aras Panim literally means paying attention, focusing a self. We speak about it in the Pasuk by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he saw and he heard the cries of the Jewish people. So the end of the verse says, Vayara Elohim et Bnei Yisrael, God saw the Jewish people, Vayeda Elohim, and he knew them. Where the asterisk is in 26, Vayeda Elohim, Natan Aleihem Leiv, Velo Helim Einav. He paid attention. He looked at them. He saw them. And he continues, we find this by Moshe Rabbeinu himself, in the end of 27, by Yar B'Sivlotam, he saw in their difficulties, Natan Einav V'Libo Liyot Metzara Lehem, he himself was empathic to their pain. Says Rav Wolbe, the first step is Ha'aras Panim, greeting people where you're greeting them interested in them. Giving them a hello that you're really interested in who they are and not in yourself. Which would mean on a practical level. Practical level. We all say, hello, how are you? Wrong. Try it this way. Hello, and then knowing who the person is, how was your trip? How was the work that was done in your house? How's your kid doing in school? What difficulty in school? You're dealing with what? You're dealing with who they are and treating them like a person. So by doing that, because hello, how are you? No one really cares how they are. But by doing that, you're really focusing in on, I care about you and I'm going to ask something specific about you because that is going to show that I care about you. I'm sensitive to you. I'm cluing myself into you and I'm stepping out of myself. The example that Rav Wolbe gives is a story of a certain Rav who's a big Baal Musar in the last generation, who when he was but a young boy, he entered the yeshiva in Kelm, which is a famous Musar yeshiva. And he describes how this young boy walked into the yeshiva, a teenager, not knowing a soul, clearly feeling very out of place and very shy. And he was standing like outside the Beis Medrash, like lost. He didn't know what to do. He was embarrassed to go in. And one of the boys happens to walk out in the hall, and the boy sees this shy person standing around. He goes over and says, hello, how are you? Welcome, so good to see you. You must be so hungry. Why don't you come, have something to eat? And the boy's saying to himself, do I know him? I must know him from somewhere. He must be from somewhere from my hometown. And then the second boy comes over to him and says, oh, it's so good to see you. How was your trip? How's the unpacking going? Maybe you want something to eat. He said, do I know this boy too? And then he says, you know what? That's the way everyone in the yeshiva greets somebody. You treat him like a person. You make them feel at home. You make them feel welcome. You make them feel loved. And he gives another example. He says there was a story of a person who became a Baal Tshuva, who returned to Judaism, and they asked him, in Israel, what was it that brought you back? He says, very simple. He says, I grew up in a very small community in Israel, very small town. There was only one religious family in this town. And this religious person was the only one who always said, hello, how are you, how's school going, how are things going? He says, if someone took such an interest in me, and no one else in this town really cared, he said, there must be some truth about Torah. And that's the truth that I wanted to find out. There's a power in the interest of others. Then says Rav Wolbe, in continuing on the next page, he says to his students, he says, you have to be careful though that when you're going to greet somebody that you don't find that you have the same enthusiasm for the same every person the same way, because then you failed. Hello, how are you? You failed. It has to be a ha'aras panim. It has to be a real welcome that's individualized for every person, because then you sensitize yourself to every person. So says Rav Wolbe very simply. He says the first level is asher yachsalo, see what they're missing. When you've understood what they're missing, or the way to understand what they're missing is to be sensitive to them. How are you sensitive to them? By taking an interest in them. Speaking to them. Asking directed questions to them that show you have an interest in their life. He says, once you're able to do that, so then you're able to pick up what is it that they're missing, even if they don't say it. And then that brings us to a level of acts of chesed, no matter how small they are. This is giving of self to others, showing concern for others. For some it might be time, for others it might be borrowing something, for others it might be just listening to where they're at. That's also chesed, giving advice and listening. And the final point Rav Wolbe makes is when you're doing this, there's one final component, and that has to be ahavas chesed, you have to love it. It can't be a burden. It can't be, okay, my morning routine. Finding people and seeing how I can help them. Blown it. You've blown it. Right? Ahavas chesed has to be a love, a desire to help another person that you really want to go beyond self. And this is what I'm trying to suggest this morning. This is what chesed is about. The definition of chesed is building worlds outside of yourself. Going beyond the self, taking an interest in others, asher yechsar lo, that which is missing to them, and giving them that. We see this by the Matan Torah, very famous Sforno. This is brought in the Sichos Musar of Chaim Shalevitz Tzatzal, source 33, where he speaks about Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahara, that the Jewish people encamped by the mountain. And Rashi says, Ki Ish Echad, Belev Echad, one person, one heart, they were all together. So Sforno explains, what does it mean, why there, Vayichan Sham, and this in particular encampment, they were all together. So he explains that what happened by Har Sinai was that when the Jewish people got there, everyone was interested in finding the best place for his friend to encamp. Where should I set up my friend's sukkah, whatever you want to call it, my friend's tent, and not so much concerned where am I going to set up my own tent. The concern for the other person and looking out for the other person, that was what was so special that deemed them worthy for Matan Torah. And this is what we're speaking about. To step aside from selves at time and to give to others. Rabbi Orlowick tells the story how a principal used to teach a class of boys, and one time their classroom was being used, so he said to the boys, grab a chair and come into my office. All the boys grabbed a chair and they came into his office and they all sat down. He said, do you see what just happened? You all grabbed a chair and sat down. He said, that's exactly right. We all grabbed a chair and sat down. He said, what would it have taken for each of you to have taken a chair and done well with it? Given it to somebody else. You all have sat down. There have been enough chairs. But it's that sensitivity of giving to others and not always focused on self. And this is small things that we're speaking about, how chesed brings us from one level to another level. The chesed of the kamocha involved in selves to a higher level of chesed, of doing it for the halach, the bedrach of following God's ways. And this is true of all of our lives. Someone says, can you please pass through some water? What does it take to do what? To pour the water for them. There's so many opportunities, so many hundreds of opportunities in our lives of just stepping outside of ourselves, seeing what the other needs. You see their water glass is empty. That's even better. What should you do? Pour them water. Why even what do they ask? If your eyes are open. And that's what the Elishua is really saying. You have to open your eyes. If your eyes are open, you'll see countless opportunities to help others. If you're always looking into self, then you'll see nothing. The world is going to be closed around you. The basis of this view of looking beyond the self, being able to give to others, or only focused in on yourself and looking at how you can satisfy yourself, is based on the famous distinction that Rav Dessler speaks about, a very famous Yisod in the Michtav. It's brought here in Strive for Truth. When the Almighty created human beings, source 34, he made them capable of both giving and taking. The faculty of giving as a sublime power is one of the attributes of the blessed creator of all things. Man, 35, has been granted the sublime power of giving, enabling him too to be merciful, to bestow happiness, to give of himself. On the other hand stands the faculty of taking, by which a person aspires to draw to himself all that comes within his way. This is what people call egotism. Selfishness is the root of all evil. And says Rav Dessler in 37, these two powers, giving and taking, form the roots of all character traits and of all actions. And note, there's no middle way. Every person is devoted at the deepest level of personality to one or the other of the two sides. And the innermost longing in the heart, there are no compromise. One is always devoted either to loving kindness and giving or to grasping and taking. Sometimes we give in order to what? In order to take. Chesed means to work on the aspect of giving for the sake of giving and not for the sake of taking. Not what can I get from it. With the ego, the kamocha is so strong. But v'alach the bedrach of how can I give for the sake of giving, for following in the footsteps of God, to make the other person feel good and not necessarily to only make myself feel good. Now, we can come back and understand the story of Noah. Now it all makes sense. Source 39. Again, Rav Dessler, Mechtam Eliyahu, the end of the second Chelek. He says that when the Torah says that they were corrupt, they were filled with chamas, filled with robbery, so the Torah, the Targum Unklus, the Aramaic translation, translates it as chatufin. They were grabbers, which is the concept of the koach hanetila, the concept of taking. what was going on in the times of Noah was very simple. The times of Noah, the people were involved in self, in satisfying self. It was a hedonistic society of how can I get the most for myself, not being concerned for anyone else. Now, that's why two of the questions can be answered. Question one, why was it that Gezel was the straw that broke the camel's back? Because a society cannot live when people are only concerned with self. Gezel is a representation. Robbery is a representation where I will do anything at all costs in order to satisfy my own needs. A society like that is a society that cannot exist. But it goes one step further. It's a society which had chesed. It had kindness. But it was a perverted kindness. It was a kindness of self-love. In fact, it's very fascinating. The Torah, in describing, in the 20th chapter of the book of Vayikra, in describing the laws of Erva, the laws of who you cannot marry, they speak about if a brother marries a sister, it's an Erva, it's an act of immorality, and says the Torah, chesed hu, it's a chesed. Very strange. It's a chesed. Chesed is a kindness. What is a kindness? Marrying your own sister? It's a perverted kindness. Because relatives are all extensions of self-love. So when you are going to have relations, an incest relation with the people around you, it's really an extension of satisfying the self in a perverted sense. And that's what the door of Noah was. You see, the times of Sodom and Amorah, they were into really hurting people. They say by the times of Noah, they always took less than Shalaprutta. They took small things. There's a distinction is, am I doing things in order to hurt others? That's the times of Sodom and Amorah, where they elongated a person's leg if it didn't fit into the bed, where they shortened a person's leg. That's how they treated strangers. That's trying to really hurt others. That's going to be the fire and the brimstone. That's how they're going to punish. This wasn't that society. It wasn't a society where I really care about hurting others. I was more concerned about what? Satisfying myself. It was a love, but it was a misdirected love that was centered around self. And that's why the punishment was what? It was water. But it was water of what extent? An overflow of water. Just like there was a perverted sense of chesed, so we have a perverted sense of chesed as its punishment, a perverted sense of water, the mabul, the flood. Now, what's left to understand is our dear friend Noah. How does he fit into this picture? So here, Rav Schwab in Mayan Beit HaShaiva explains, and this is source 41, that Noah lived for over 600 years. And can you imagine, did not influence one single individual. He built an ark for over 120 years and did not influence one individual. Why? So he says, because the generation was a generation that was involved in self. What was the difference between Noah and his comrades? They were interested in physical desires for self, while Noah was involved in spiritual pursuits. But it was spiritual pursuits that only involved whom? Himself and his family. It wasn't spiritual pursuits outward. This was a generation. It was a generation of self. It was a generation of ego. It was a generation where they only focused in on themselves. That's why, says Rav Schwab, had Noah lived in the times of Abraham, which was a time of going out and calling the name of God to the world around you, and involving oneself in hospitality, and involving oneself in bringing the name of God to the world, Noah would have been lo klum, he would have been nothing, says Rav Schwab. Why? Because Noah as a personality is a personality of self. Because that's Bedoratav, that's in his generation, because he lived in a generation of self. And that's why Noah, in order to be trained outside of this, had to spend an entire year doing what? Feeding animals. To teach him, you have to go beyond yourself. It was a training in how to start the world again. This is what Avraham Avinu learned. This is the attribute of Avraham Avinu. You want to start the world. You want to know what God wants. He wants chesed. He wants to give to others. This is the final idea, and I think it's a beautiful idea. But this explains, if we understand Noach as this personality, as being involved in perfection of self because the society around him was a society of self, we understand why our rabbis felt that they had to judge Noach lignai for the negative. Again, Rav Shwam Zatzal, source 43, and he says the following: Hine mishurash v'gezat mishorish v'gezat tov lo yula davara. From a good root, no bad can come from it. Im lo shenim sa tamun b'hamakor eizen nitiyah asher lo tovahi. Unless in the root itself, there's something imperfect. If there's something imperfect in the seedling, so then the tree will be affected. But if the seedlings are perfect, so then there can be no imperfection in the tree. V'lechein, therefore, kishira'u chazal, when our rabbi saw, shiatzam minoach tzadikim gedolim shenesu mirkava lashchina, from Noah came great tzadikim, the avos, Moshe Rabbeinu, Klal Yisrael, who served God. Ulumatza, on the other hand, nimsa'u ben todos Noach, but yet you also find coming from Noach, right? Noach started the whole world. B'meshech hadorot, anshe resha niflaim, but you also see such wicked people. Ked Nebuchadnezzar, like Nebuchadnezzar, Haman, Titus, all these people. Hine al korcha, we must say, shayat tamun bekerav hamakor eze tchuna lignai asher menosas uparach geza v'shayim. By looking at the generations that came from Noah, which means looking at humanity, and the fact that we see such wicked people, it must mean when we look back at the seedlings, we look back at the makor, we look back at the root, we need to find that there was something imperfect in the roots themselves, in the seedlings themselves, that could have created personalities as wicked as these people. But based on what we're saying, it makes a lot of sense. What was the imperfection of Noah? He was a tzaddik, he was a tamim, he was a wholesome person. The imperfection is this concept of being perfect for oneself. And if the ego and the self is taken in the wrong way, you have a Haman who says that Enu Shevali, it doesn't matter to me the fact that the entire world is bowing down to me. One person isn't bowing down to me. I'm ready to destroy a whole nation. Why? Because it's a perverted sense of self. The entire world needs to bow down to me. It's the Titus, it's the Nebuchadnezzar, these world powers. Because if this is what we find in Noah, we find in that trait of self. Noah was able to channel it to God, but that trait was found there. And when that trait is not channeled for the right reasons and not channeled in the correct mode, then you'll have coming from him such terrible, wicked people as Haman, as Titus, and Nebuchadnezzar. Let's summarize what we've seen today. I think what we try to present today is that the time of Noah is a time involved in self. A time where if you're just going to be focused in on self, robbery is going to ensue, theft is going to ensue, because it's what can I get for myself. Such a society cannot work in this world. We need to have the ability for people to get along with each other and help each other out. This concept of the overindulgence in self, the self-love, is reflected in the fact that the marble was of water, the flood was of water, it was a perverted sense of water, a perverted sense of love. And this is the character trait which perhaps is the difficulty in Noah, that he was involved in self, which was great, he was a tzaddik, but he didn't influence anybody, and it was this character trait which is what affected future generations to be able to pervert it into being such wicked people. For us, what is it that we need to work on when reading through the story of Noah? We need to understand what was it that Noah had to be involved with for an entire year. Why couldn't the animals just be, I don't know, on some island somewhere, safe? Why was it necessary for him to take them into the Teva? In fact, the Michtav says that that's what saved the Teva. By laws of nature, the Teva, the Ark, could not have survived. It was going above and beyond the self, involved in feeding animals who in no way could repay Noah. It was complete devoid of self. There was even no thankfulness. He's late to the lions, he hurts him. And I think to take what we can take from today is what the Alei Shur was saying, is that the way to work on chesed, to build our own world of Olam Chesed Yibaneh, is to be sensitive, asher yechzar lo, to each and every individual's a little world. What do they need? What is it that they are missing? How do we be sensitive to them? By haras panim, by treating them as an individual, greeting them, what's specific for them. And then once we have the ability to greet them for who they are, to give what they need, what's missing for them, and to do it with clearly with avas chesed, a tremendous amount of love. And that's the bracha that I leave all of us with, is that we should be successful in our relationships with people, that we should have this haras panim, we should have this glow in dealing with other people, that we're able to find that which is missing for them, and to build up many worlds as a rectification for the story of Noah.